Morning. Today's daf in Shabbos is daf test. We are starting this morning on Ches Amud Beis towards the bottom of the Amud with the words Amar Mar. We go back to a brisa that we saw on daf Vav, where the brisa introduces to the Dal Rishios. The brisa are really fundamental in terms of a description of what are in fact the Dal Rishios and how each one of them are defined and how each one of them operate. So we have since the brisa on daf Vav. So for the last number of days, Zion, Ches, and now what is today, Tes. So we've been defining and describing each of the expressions in the Braisa. Braisa introduced us to the Dal Rishios, Rishios Yachar, Rishios Rabban, Karmelis, and Amakam Patur. And we went through exactly what they are and how they behave in terms of the Malacha of Hotza'a. We're going to go now back to a point in the Braisa where the Braisa described transferring from Rishios Yachar, Rishios Rabban, but using the iskufa in the middle. The iskufa, as we just established, is a makom pater in this particular context. You look back at the Braisa reads, I'm just rereading back on Davav Amud Aleph, it's towards the bottom of the Amud, Adam Omed Ali Yiskufa, a person can be standing on the iskufa. This iskufa literally translates as a threshold. In the context over here, it means that it's between the house and the street. So the house being, of course, the Rishos Yachid, the street being Rishos Rabim, and the iskufa right now is centered between the two. So the Braisa said, no tell me balabais v'no sein lo, no tell me ani v'no sein lo. Uvavashi lo yi tell me balabais v'no sein la ani, me ani v'no sein la balabais. So the Braisa states very clearly what you could do is you could receive it while you're standing on the iskufa from either direction. You could receive it from the Rishos Yachid, who the balabais is handing it to you, or you could be receiving it from the Rishos Rabim where the ani is situated. The only proviso, the Braisa says, Uvovad, just going back to the Braisa and just rereading the Braisa, Uvovad, shalo, you tell me balabais, v'nosin la'ani, mani v'nosin la'balabais. What you cannot do is basically serve as a conduit and have the balabais pass it to the ani through you. That you cannot do, and the reason why you can't do that is for obvious reasons, because at this point in time now it becomes a farce. Meaning even though technically it would be fine, because no one made any kind of illegal transfer, everybody did a perfectly legitimate transfer, but if ultimately the item is going to get from Rishos Yachid to Rishos Rabim, so it's going to get to the point where it's a bit of a farce, and people will then, the next step will be that people just simply transfer directly from the Rishos Rabim to the Rishos Yachid. So we go now to the Gemara. So the Gemara first is going to quote it, so I'm just going to reread it quickly. All three of them are going to be exempt. Exemption over here, meaning it's nobody did anything wrong, but collectively, again, as we already pointed out, kind of looks like a farce. Now, presumably, a reading of this Braisa is going to be very difficult for Rava's position. Dama Rava. If I transfer an item from the beginning of 4 Amos to the end of 4 Amos, meaning I go 4 Amos in Rishos Rabim, even though you go over yourself, I'll explain that better in just a moment. Chayev. Rav is of the opinion that one would be chayev if he did that. Now, what exactly does that mean? He was mavir derech alav. Take a look at the top Rashi on Tesamad Aleph. Rashi writes, shehigbiu lemalam yod. So I'm doing this, but of course nobody's watching me do this. But in other words, you take the item, you have very really long arms, and you pick it up. You yourself don't even move. You pick it up and you just simply bring it over your head, and now you bring it to the other side of your body. Your arms are so long that the item now traversed Dalet Amos. You happen to have been at that point standing in a Rishos Rabim. Now, what is the what's the key element over here? What's the chiddush of Rava? Rava points out that, as we have said time and again, you're staying in the Rishos Rabim. The Rishos Rabim has a halachic ceiling of 10 tefachim. So that means that when you put it over your head to pass it over you to the other side of yourself, so obviously during that duration, it is above 10 tefachim. And considering the fact that it's now above 10 tefachim, it's in a makom pater. So if you want to now isolate just the item itself, and look where it started from and look where it ended. It started in Rishos Rabim. It did go 4 Amos, but at the very same time, it also went through a Makom Pater. So you see the trajectory of Rishos Rabim, Makom Pater, back down to Rishos Rabim. Rava says the fact that it at a certain point in time went through a Makom Pater is insignificant, And Rava therefore concludes that the person is going to be chayav for having transferred dalan amas brishos rabim. The Gemara at this point in time thinks it's a question because ultimately it's going from one rishos to another rishos through a makam pater, and Rava just simply discounts the fact that it went through a makam pater. Much like our case over here, where the item goes from rishos yachid to rishos rabim, it went through a makam pater, and in our brisa, our daf vav brisa, we don't discount the fact that it went through a makam pater. Now, the difference between the two cases are obvious, and the Gemara actually spells out the obvious difference. Hasam lo nach hachanach. The Gemara points out that in the case of the Brisa and Davav, it actually was handed to somebody who was on the Makom Pater. So there was a hanach on the Makom Pater. So you can't discount the Makom Pater because it was actually secured and placed in the Makom Pater, and then from there it made a second transfer from the Makom Pater to the other domain. Over here, however, is just going through the makam pater and never made a hanach on the makam pater, and that's why in our case over here the makam pater is going to be discounted, and that's why ultimately we're just going to say that it went for amos in a rishus harabim. We're in the very top of Tesamud Aleph, starting at the two dots, and now we're going to go back to the brisa and we're going to deal with a difficult part of the brisa. If you go back to the brisa Achirim Omrim, so we are now going over the concluding portion of the Braisa. It's on Vavam and Aleph. It's all the way on the bottom, like about 6-7 lines from the bottom of the Amud. Achem Omrim Iskufa Mishameshes Beis Rishuyos. The Iskufa serves as two different domains. Bizman Shapesach Pasuch Kalifnim, Pesach Na'ul Kalachutz. If the door is open, it's like the interior. If the door is closed, it's like the exterior. And then there's another portion of the Braisa, which we're going to hold off on because we're going to discuss that next part later. In the meantime, however, this obviously needs clarification. The Braisa really doesn't, even by itself, hard to make sense of it. And so the Gemara now is going to be spending a little bit of time trying to clarify what exactly the point of the Braisa was. The top of the Gemara. Achem Omri Miskufa Mishamesh Shev Rishus Bezman Shah Pesach Pasuch Kalifnim Pesach Na'u Kalachutz. Now the Gemara asks the question, the Gemara says, now, are we talking about where there's no lechi? Now, by virtue of the fact that the Gemara here is invoking the term lechi, so immediately, and Rashi picks up on this right away, you know that we're talking about a mavui. So let us just get a crash course in a mavui, and we'll understand then what the Gemara is describing. A mavui is translated as an alleyway. It's not the best translation because it's hard to conjure up exactly what the Gemara is talking about when we think about our modern alleys. But basically, it is an area that is bounded by three walls. The fourth side is opened up into Rishus Rabin. Now, the fact that it has three walls means it's Rishus Yachid, right? Like we discussed earlier in our perek. It has many openings to it where it opens up into various courtyards, various chatzeros. And the chatzeros are courtyards where people live in the courtyards. They don't live in the actual courtyard itself, but their houses all abut courtyards. So we have houses opening up into courtyards, and the courtyards subsequently opening up into the mavui. This mavui is halachically Rishus Yachid, but because it's shared by many different courtyards, so the Chachamim were concerned that it looks like a public area. You want to carry in the mavui, so what you need to do is two things. One is that you have to set up a sheet of mavos. Sheet of mavos is the same thing as an eruv. Just it's the term that's used for a mavui. So basically, we need an eruv. Everyone needs to make a contribution and unify the area of the mavui. So now it is a unified area, so you can carry in the mavui. That is one institution by the mavui. But then there's also a second institution, and that is the following. By virtue of the fact that the mavui is opened up into a rishus harabim, so now the chachamim were concerned that even though technically the mavui is a rishus yachid, and even though you made an eruv, but because of its wide opening right into the Rishus Rabim, the Chachamim said that you don't have to put a wall on that fourth side, but you have to put something over there to mark and distinction and make a distinction between the Mavui and the Rishus Rabim. What is that mark going to be? It's going to be one of two things. It's either going to be a Lechi or it's going to be a Korah. A Lechi is a vertical pole that's put on the side of the Mavui, right by the opening of where it opens up into the Rishus Rabim, or a Korah. A Korah is just simply a beam, and the beam is only going to be one tefach wide that goes over the top. And these are the two ways in which one could rectify the mavui, now allowing for carrying within the mavui. Fine. That was your crash course. Now, The Gemara says that we're describing over here the opening of the Mavui. It is called an iskufa, it's called the threshold, just simply because it is in fact the area that is separating the private domain of the Mavui and the Rishus HaRabim. So this threshold area now is going to be distinguished by the fact that when the door is open versus the door being closed. To which the Gemara now says, I don't understand. If we're talking about a Mavui, it has to have either a Lechi or a Korah. Right now, let's assume it has a Lechi. So the Gemara says, Alpha Gav Delesa Lechi, V'Amar Rav Chama Bar Guria Amar Rav Tocha Pesach Tzarech Lechi Achir Lahatiro. So the Gemara says, now wait 1 second. We have a halacha that we're going to learn together in Erevin, and it happens to be, by the way, in Erevin and it's on Daf Tes. So here it's just a nice memory aid. Shabbos Daf Tes, Erevin Daf Tes. So we're going to learn together that if I put a Lechi on the side of the Mavui, which I'm supposed to do, I can carry up to the Lechi. I can't carry beyond the Lechi. That means to say that let's say the Lechi is really wide. I can only carry up to the interior edge of the Lechi. I can't carry beyond that point in time, even though technically I'm still in the Mavui. Now, what if I wanted to carry into the interior area of the Lechi, meaning other what we're going to describe now as the Iskufa? So I'm going to need a second Lechi on the exterior side of the Lechi. Now, it sounds a little bit strange, but if you have a picture and you can see this in picture, it would be extremely helpful. So the Gemara says, so what does the doorway have anything to do with our discussion? Now, the Gemara says, well, maybe the Iskufa's area is insignificant. As we know, a halachically significant area is 4x4 tefachim. Now, considering that this is a mavui, it's obviously going to be significantly wider than 4 tefachim, but still, in terms of the depth, if the depth is 4 tefachim, so it's significant, and the Gemara right now wants to consider, at least propose, that if the depth of this iskufa is less than 4 tefachim, it's not significant. The Gemara says, but, v'hamar rav chama bar guria amar rav tocha pesach, alfa pishayim bo dal dal tzarech lechi achir la'atiro. Nevertheless, the halacha is that in order to walk within the area of the iskufa, it needs a secondary lechi. Meaning, if the first lechi is really wide, covering the whole area, you can only carry up to the interior edge. And if you want to carry within the iskufa, you're going to need a second lechi. And that's even if the depth is less than 4 tefachim. So when all said and done, the Gemara is basically coming around full circle to asking the question, what does the door have anything to do with this discussion? And so what the Gemara now is going to propose is one of two suggestions. I'm Rav Yehuda Amarav, Hacha b'iskufas mavui askinan. So the Gemara's first suggestion is that we're talking about the iskufas mavui. Now, the Gemara over here is making a small change. And the way Rashi understands it is that we're no longer assuming that this mavui was rectified with a lechi, but rather what happened is that we used a korah. We used a beam going across. If you take a look at Rashi, Hacha b'iskufas mavui askinan, I'm reading the Rashi inside, kidikamart, meaning we're talking about a mavui, avalob mavui sheikhshir b'lechi, but not a mavui that was rectified with a lechi, elab mavui sheikhshir b'kora. We're talking about now the beam going across the top. V'korsa mavui shir rachva tefach. Now, as we're going to learn together in Erevin, it's a tefach wide. V'iskufa v'ovei apesach mistama rachavim heim. Now, as far as the threshold, it's wider. It's wider than a tefach. Nimsa, Chetzio shel ovei apesach mekura vechetzio eino mekura. Now, the way Rashi is describing it, and here a picture would be extremely helpful, but the way Rashi is describing it is that the beam does go across, but not over the far exterior end of the entrance, but rather it is recessed a little bit inside, where it's slightly interior. Ukegon she'iniach hakora kalpei panim letzad hamavui. That's what Rashi just described. Hilkach Pesach Pasuach Kilifnim, Michura Chitzon Shakora, Vilifnim, Visavala Kamandam, Ramutali Shamish Tachatakora, Omishim Tam Haikara, Milavar, Kidmefarsh Plutai Be'erevin, Omishim Dekora, Mishim Chitza Daminan, Chuda Chitzon Yord Vesose. Now, in order to understand this last part of Rashi that I just read, I ran right through, Rashi over here, I'm going to just paraphrase. Rashi over here is basically summarizing the Gemara in Erevin. When you put that beam over the top of the Mavui, over the entrance of the Mavui, so how is that beam actually adjusting the Mavui? There is one of two ways to say it. One way to say it is because it's basically serving as the heker. It's basically going to be there as a reminder, meaning it does not have any halachic wall status, but it's just simply a heker. But being that it's a heker, I'm allowed to walk up to, even be directly underneath the actual the actual korah because it's just there to remind me. And it's even up to the point where I'm even underneath it, I can go up to the exterior edge of the korah. Another way to say it, says Rashi, is that the korah actually serves as a halachic partition. In other words, the korah is mishum mechitza. It operates like a mechitza. But still, when we say that it's a mechitza, which part of it is the mechitza? Once again, it's going to be the exterior edge of that korah, which is going to be viewed as if it's coming down. In either way, you can go now up to the area of the korah, and you can even be underneath the korah. Good. Now let's go back to the Gemara, and now let's understand how the door plays a role in all this. So, okay, exactly what we just described, where the korah is slightly recessed interior. Vikirav kape pnim. And the it is now a little bit recessed inward. Pesach pasuch kilifnim, pesach na'ul kilichutz. Now, if the door is open, so that means to say now that the only thing that is really serving now as a partition is my korah. So we're going to go back to the halachas that we just learned together. That I can go not only up to the korah, I can even go underneath the korah as well. However, if the doors are closed, so now we're going to be assuming that the korah is directly outside of the door. I can only go up to the door, I can't go beyond. Now, admittedly, if the door is closed, you're going to have a challenging time accessing the area underneath the korah. So, and that's a pragmatic issue, and I don't want to right now deal with the pragmatic part of it, just with the more with the more fundamental issue, which is once the door is closed, so now the korah is no longer serving as the partition. And at that point in time, you can't say that the edge of the korah is in fact going to go down, because the korah is immediately in front of the door, and we no longer view the korah as the partition separating the mavui from the street. Now, Rashi over here is bothered by the fact that that may be true. Don't we have a general idea of pi tikra yored v'sosim, that the edge comes down? Why don't we say that over here? So Rashi writes over here as a basic rule in terms of understanding halachic walls, that yes, we do say pi tikra yored v'sosim, but that's only in a scenario where the ceiling is minimum 4 tefachim. Over here, it's a korah. It is only 1 tefach wide, and so therefore, if it doesn't operate as a korah, so then the edge of it doesn't come down. So, it is really, in terms of application, it doesn't amount to a whole lot geographically, but the point is that when the door is open, and now the korah is serving as a korah, you can go up to the korah, you can even be underneath the korah. Admittedly, it only gives you one additional tefach of room to maneuver and to carry. If the doors are closed and the korah is immediately outside of the door, now the korah is no longer functioning as a korah and you cannot carry underneath the area of the korah. Okay, that's all approach number one. Admittedly, it's a little bit complex, but that was approach number one. A second approach of the Gemara, Rav Ashi Amar La'olam B'Iskufas B'Isaskinan. Rav Ashi says, no, we're not talking about Mavi, we're talking about a house. And the truth of the matter is that this pshat that Rav Ashi is going to offer is just a little bit more consistent within the Braisa. Meaning, if you go back to the Braisa on Daf Vav, the Braisa never was discussing a Mavui. So the idea that the Gemara now, that the Braisa was jumping to the topic of Mavui, is a little bit challenging. And so what Rav Ashi is suggesting is, no, we're really talking about a house. And so we're talking about a house, so the house, of course, has got a roof. And it's got doors. And the roof actually is going to be a significant roof. It's going to be like a regular roof of a house. So why should a door make any difference whatsoever? And now the Gemara is going to give, once again, a very specific context of what we're describing. Ukegon shekira b'shtei kara she'ein b'zu arba ve'ein b'zu arba ve'ein b'ein zu l'zu shlosha. Over here we're talking about where the roof is made up of two slats. Each slat is going to be a little bit less than 4 tefachim. The slats are pretty close to one another. They're within 3 tefachim of one another. So, using the principle of Lavud, it tells me now that these slats are really connected. So if I have these slats which are connected, so now the totality of these two slats is greater than 4 tefachim. Obviously now, the edge of the exterior slat is going to come down and serve as a wall. The Rosh Hashanah goes all the way up to and includes the edge of the exterior slat. Now, if there's a door, here's where the door becomes significant. Now, the delus be'emtsa,
The door now is situated directly underneath that open area between these two slats. Now, Pesach Basor Kelifnim. Now, if the doors are open, so now you have the Lavud principle in operation, and now you can go up to and including the exterior slat, because these two slats are connected through Lavud. However, Pesach Na'ul, but if the door is closed and locked, Kelechutz. Now, here's the problem. Once the door is closed, so even though the slats are next to one another, but the door creates enough of a barrier between them where we no longer say Lavud. Now each of the slats now are individualized, and because each slat by themselves is less than four tefachim, we no longer have the principle of pitikra yored visosim. The halachic wall is not going to come down from that exterior slat, and so therefore now this threshold outside of the door is not going to have the status of the interior, but right now it's going to have the status of the exterior. That is another pshat in terms of what the Braisa meant, and again, it introduces us why it's significant that a door is going to make any kind of difference. So just quickly to summarize, the Gemara dealt with a challenging portion of the Braisa, where the Braisa had said that there's a difference whether the door is open or closed. Why would it make a difference? So the Gemara gave two situations in which it would make a difference. One is in the case of the Mavui, where the Mavui was corrected with a Korah going over the top. The door is directly in front of the Korah, well, in front of when you're from the inside. And when the door is open, so then the car is serving as a wall. When the door is closed, the door is serving as a wall. And that's one pshat. The second pshat we just learned is that we're talking about where it's a doorway to a house. And the two outer slats that are going to the threshold are each one of them less than four tefachim, but within three tefachim of one another when the doorway is opened. So then Lavud connects the two. When the doorway is closed, so Lavud no longer connects the two, and that's why it makes a difference whether the door is open or closed. Continuing in the Gemara, we're on Testament Aleph towards the bottom of the Amud at the two dots. V'im ha'isa ha'iskufa gvol yud v'rach v'dalet. Harezer v'shus la'atzma. The Braisa then concludes by teaching us that if the iskufa, so I have a threshold that's 10 tefachim high and an area 4x4 tefachim, so now it becomes an independent reshus. Now, just as a challenging note, if the iskufa, if the threshold to the house is that high, how are you getting from the house to the iskufa? But the answer has to be that either there's a ramp or there's stairs. Anyway, point being is that if I have the iskufa, which it now defines as a reshus harabim, sorry, as a reshus yachid, and it is immediately juxtaposed right next to the house, so the Braisa tells us that the iskufa now is a reshus la'atzma. Now, that's very difficult to understand because it's just simply now a reshus yachid contiguous to your house, so shouldn't it just simply be part and parcel of your house? And the Braisa is teaching us it's not viewed as part and parcel of your house. Well, why should that be? So the Gemara is going to explain. So the Gemara says that this is in conjunction with an opinion of Rav Meir. The opinion of Rav Meir is kol makom shatamotze beis reshuyos, when I have two domains, vehein reshus achas. And really, the truth of the matter is that it's the same domain, but they're contiguous to one another. Kigon. For an example, Amud Bereshus Yachid Gavol Yud V'Rachav Dalet. So you have a pillar in a Bereshus Yachid, and the pillar is 10 tefachim high and 4x4 tefachim wide. Also, Lekatef Alav. One is not allowed to take something that they're carrying and put it down on the pillar, even though the pillar is in a Bereshus Yachid. Now, why should that be? That's very difficult to understand. So, Gzeri Mishum, Tel Bereshus Rabin. Because if you get comfortable with the idea of just unloading your that which you're carrying onto a pillar, even though right now currently in the Rishus Yachin, the pillar is Rishus Yachin, the pillar itself is Rishus Yachin, but if you get comfortable with this idea, so what may end up happening is that you'll be in Rishus Rabin, and because you're so comfortable with the idea, you'll just simply take your bag from off of you and put it on a pillar in the Rishus HaRabim. Now that, of course, constitutes an Issa D'Oraisa of transferring from Rishus HaRabim to Rishus HaYachid. So Rav Meir, as Gzera says, I just don't want anyone to get into the habit of doing that. So even if the pillar is in a Rishus HaYachid, one is banned from doing that as Gzera D'Rabbanan. Okay. And the Braisa that concludes with this line of, if the iskufa is 10 height and 4x4, so then one cannot transfer from the house to the iskufa, even though it's really all one contiguous Rishos HaYachid because of the gzera of Rabbi Meir. If this is the first time you're hearing of this gzera of Meir, okay, this is one of those unusual circumstances where we don't paskin like Rabbi Meir and his gzeras. Tosos notes this on the very bottom of the Amud. Tosos writes that generally speaking, we do follow the gzeras of Rabbi Meir, but this is one of those circumstances where we don't. And Tosos has support in terms of why, in this particular case, we don't follow the gzera of Rabbi Meir. Adkan, that takes us to the end of our first topic of Masechet Shabbos. And that was a lengthy introduction to the topic of Hotza'ah. And for the last now, almost nine blot of Gemara, we have been covering the Malach of Hotza'ah based on the first Mishnah. But now we start Masechet Shabbos. Now, of course, I don't mean that, but what I mean is that now we're going to go through the beginning of Shabbos, meaning right now we're going to be on Friday afternoon. And like we discussed in the very beginning of the Masechta, Tosos made this point in the very beginning as well, that generally speaking, a Masechta takes us through the day sequentially from the beginning into the day. Now, over here, when we're talking about the beginning of the day, we're really talking about Erev Shabbos, because obviously you have to prepare for Shabbos, and so we're going to be talking about a Shabbos preparations. And for here, the next perek, which is going to deal with the mitzvah of Hadlakas Neros, the third perek is going to be dealing with putting up food for Shabbos, as will the fourth perek as well. The fifth perek is going to be more about Hotzah, and the sixth perek a little bit more about Hotzah, and the seventh perek we introduce ourselves to the Malachos. But it's at this point in time now we're going to be talking about how to prepare on Erev Shabbos. So the Mishnah over here is going to be teaching us things that one should avoid doing in the afternoon. Now, also, just as one more introductory note before we start the Mishnah, this Mishnah over here is also going to be telling us what generally one is not allowed to do on any given afternoon. Meaning, it's not just limited to things you can't do on Erev Shabbos, but the truth of the matter is, things you can't do in general in the afternoon. Well, what's the consideration for the general afternoon? Consideration, of course, is Mincha. Meaning, obviously, there's a Chiyuv to daven Mincha. And in the afternoon, when a person is extraordinarily busy, so if he gets involved in any activity that's an involved activity, so there's a concern that he's just simply going to miss Mincha. So what the Mishnah now is going to teach us is, these are activities that one should avoid doing in the afternoon. We're going to define which part of the afternoon. But these are the things that one is not allowed to do in the afternoon so as to not miss Mincha. So the truth of the matter is that even though this is a Mishnah in Shabbos, really, this Mishnah is not just limited to Friday afternoon. It also would include every single day as well. So number one, a person can't sit in front of the barber as it's now approaching Mincha until he davens. Meaning, if you daven Mincha, obviously, so then there's nothing holding you back. The problem is that if you haven't davened Mincha yet, and now you're getting involved for a haircut, so then you have the risk of missing Mincha. Back then, it's obvious, a haircut was a much longer endeavor than it is nowadays. Nowadays, haircut, I'm obviously speaking from personal experience, is a 5 to 10 minute enterprise. But back in the day, obviously it was much more involved. And then the Mishnah gives a number of other activities that a person is not allowed to do for fear of missing Mincha. A person should not go into the Shvitz and not go into the Borsiki. Now the Borsiki is a tannery. But over here it could very well be that the Mishnah is talking about any endeavor that is a skilled endeavor that requires work and analysis. It doesn't necessarily have to be limited to a tannery. Most of us are not involved in that endeavor. And not to eat, in other words, don't sit down for a significant meal, velo ledin, and also don't sit down in judgment as the afternoon approaches and you haven't davened mincha yet. Now, v'im ischilo ein mafsikin. Really interesting line of the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, now what if you did? Meaning the Mishnah says, look, lechatchila, obviously you shouldn't have started. But let's say you did. So even though you did, and even though you did inappropriately, there's no need to stop, meaning you can continue your endeavor. Now we're going to make the salient point. That's of course assuming that there will in fact be time afterwards. If there's no time afterwards, so then you should stop and daven mincha. Mafsikin, now in our Mishnah, we have the words likros kriyashma, or the other gear says likriyashma. Either way, it's the same point. Mafsikin likriyashma, vein mafsikin litfila. One needs to stop for Shema, one does not need to stop for Mincha. Now, the distinction between Shema and, one needs to stop for Shema, one needs not to stop for Shemona Esrei. The obvious difference between Shema and Shemoneh Esrei, Shema's Daraisa, Shemoneh Esrei is Midrabanan. And so therefore, for Shema being a mitzvah Daraisa, and your time of saying Shema now becomes limited, so therefore, if you're involved in an activity, and there's a concern that you may miss the Shema, so then you have to stop regardless. Even if you gauge there is going to be time afterwards, but nevertheless, Shema is a din Daraisa, so you need to stop the activity. As opposed to Shemoneh Esrei, where there you can gauge. If in fact you think you have time to finish, so then continue with the activity and then finish afterwards. And again, why is there more flexibility as it relates to davening Shemoneh Esrei? Because that's a din derabanan. Shema is a din daraisa. That is the simplest way to say over the Mishnah. The Gemara starts off, Hai Samach Lemincha. Now, in terms of having to worry about it's the afternoon and Samach Lemincha, and therefore you shouldn't engage in these activities, which mincha are we describing? And as we have learned numerous times, in the afternoon, there's what's called Mincha Gedola and there's what's called Mincha Ketana. Mincha Gedola starts at 12:30. The numbers I'm giving is assuming a perfect day, where the day starts at 6 a.m. and ends at 6 p.m. And so therefore, we could just discuss it in nice whole numbers that we're used to hearing. So Mincha Gedola starts at 12:30. As the sun now goes over the midpoint of the sky and starts now heading into the western hemisphere, So this is now the afternoon. It's at this point in time where one could daven mincha, one could start to daven mincha. This period of time is referred to as mincha gedola. Mincha ketana, so that is now 3.5 hours into the afternoon. So that would be 3:30. 3:30 in the afternoon would be mincha ketana, where it begins, and then it's a 2.5 hour period from 3:30 until 6 p.m. What's the preferable time to daven mincha in general? So interestingly enough, the Gemara never states that point clearly. It's machlokas of Rishonim in terms of when is the optimal time to daven mincha in general. The Rambam's position is that one should be davening mincha ketana, later in the afternoon. How does the Rambam arrive at that conclusion? Actually, it's pretty straightforward. We learn back in Brachos that why do we daven mincha? So one of the opinions over there is that it's keneged our karbanos, because it's instituted because of the carbon tamid. There was the Tamid Shel Shachar and Tamid Shel Bein Arbayim. When was the Tamid Shel Bein Arbayim offered? It was offered during Mincha Ketana. So if the Mincha that we're davening is to correspond to the Mincha Ketana, so therefore the Rambam says the optimal time to daven Mincha is during the Mincha Ketana period. Obviously the Rambam would be fine for somebody davening during Mincha Gedola, but in terms of the optimum time, it would be during Mincha Ketana. The Tur argues with the Rambam. The Tur writes that the optimal time to daven Mincha is Mincha Gedola. Why? Very simple. You have an opportunity to daven mincha, take advantage of it as soon as you can. So that's a general debate amongst the Rishonim in terms of when's the optimal time to daven. Okay, but going back now to our Mishnah and our discussion, we are discussing when the Mishnah says that you're not allowed to engage in these activities as it's approaching mincha, which mincha is it describing? So I'm just going to reread from the beginning of the Gemara. If we're talking about mincha gedola, my lo, haika shas be yom tuva. If we're talking about Mincha Gedola, you have an entire afternoon in front of you. You have plenty of time to take care of whatever you're taking care of and to daven Mincha later. So it's very hard to understand that our Mishnah is talking about Mincha Gedola. So Ella Samach LeMincha Ketana. So the Gemara says that we're talking about Mincha Ketana. So meaning as you're approaching 3:30 in the afternoon, and now you head to the barber, so now the consideration has to be, well, I haven't daven Mincha yet, and so therefore I should be daven Mincha before getting involved in any of these serious activities. Interesting, the Gemara over here doesn't weigh in the consideration of what if you have a minyan kavua, what if you know that you're going to a specific minyan, what if you're davening b'tzibur. So I understand that there are a number of other variables that the Gemara over here does not take into account, but just in terms of the basic idea, if you get involved in these activities and it's later in the afternoon, so the Chachamim were concerned that we'd forget about mincha. Im ischilo im afsikin. Now, continuing in the Mishnah says that if I started, admittedly, inappropriately, but im afsikin, there's no reason to stop. Meaning, you could now engage in that activity. And again, like I said back in the Mishnah, gauging that you'll still have time to daven mincha afterwards. Now, presumably, this upends the position of Rav Yeshua ben Levi. Da'am Rav Yeshua ben Levi, kem she'igiyaz man, tfilas ha-mincha, asur la'adam she'itom klom. Kodem she'ispalal tfilas ha-mincha. Rav Yeshua ben Levi says that once the zman of mincha arrives, so then he uses extraordinarily strong language. He says, "Aser la'adam shi'itom klum." It is prohibited for a person to taste anything until he davens mincha. Now, it's not clear from Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi if, in fact, he's describing Mincha Gedola or Mincha Ketana, but what is abundantly clear is that the language he uses is extraordinarily strong. He uses the words Aser. And if you take a look at Tosos, fourth Tosos on the Amud, Levi Tehav Tehufter Yehoshua ben Levi, Mashma Leda Afilu Hizchil, Mafsik, Mida Amar Aser Litom. So Tosos is sensitive to that language of Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi. The idea that he's using the word Aser means that if I were to, if even started eating, you gotta stop. And our Mishnah that says that you have an allowance and you can gauge, so it sounds like that's not going like Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi. And Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi now seems to be going against our Mishnah. So the Gemara says, So the Gemara suggests one of two suggestions. Maybe our Mishnah over here is talking about Mincha Gedola. And Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi now is talking about Mincha Ketana. And let's go then back to the Gemara's first question. If we're talking about Mincha Gedola, you have plenty of time. So why is there any concern whatsoever that if I were to engage in any of these activities, I'm not going to be able to finish it? In fact, let's go back to the haircut. The Gemara says, can you imagine a nearly 6-hour haircut? That's hard to understand. To which the Gemara says, Uvetesporos ben el Asha. So the Gemara says, well, here's what we could suggest. Really, our Mishnah is talking about Mincha Gedola. Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi is talking about Mincha Ketana. How can a haircut extend for almost 6 hours? Well, the Gemara says, the haircut of El Asha. Now, the haircut of El Asha, Rashi says he was the son-in-law of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, and he expended a lot of money in terms of getting a very specific and special haircut. What kind of haircut did he receive? He received the haircut that looked like the Kohen Gadol. Now, oddly enough, he wasn't a Kohen, and it was post-Chorban Beis HaMikdash. But he wanted this special type of haircut. For more of a description of this haircut, you could see Rashi, who describes it in a little more detail. But anyway, it was a very involved haircut. And being that it was so involved, so therefore, it would actually take the entire afternoon, and therefore, a concern would be, don't sit down for this haircut if you haven't done mincha. As far as the other activities of the Mishnah, v'lo l'merchatz, l'kule milsa d'merchatz. Now, when we're talking about merchatz, we're talking about the entire procedure, meaning not just the act of going into the bath, but the warming up of the water. Again, it could be very involved. Lo laborsiki, laborsiki gedola. As far as the borsiki is concerned, we're talking about not the tannery that's very big. In other words, it's a business. It's almost like industry. And if he goes there, he's basically going to get lost in his work. Velola echo basuda gedola. And when we're talking about a suda, we're talking about a major meal. Now, it's kind of hard to imagine a major meal still going nearly 6 hours. But again, just to defend Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, we could be talking about a major meal. V'lo l'din b'tchilas din. And as far as din is concerned, we're talking about tchilas din, the beginning of the judicial process, where there it could take upwards of nearly 6 hours. So, the Gemara challenges our Mishnah based on Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi. The Gemara answers. Our first answer is that Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi is describing describing Mincha Ketana, where there the language is very strong, Aser, and you're not allowed to start, and if you do, you have to stop. And our Mishnah, which gives more allowance and more flexibility, that's talking about Mincha Gedola. Why should there be concern about Mincha Gedola when there's so much time left in the afternoon? So the Gemara gave Ukimtas in terms of why there should be such a concern. The Gemara gives a second approach. Rav Acha bar Yaakov Amar L'Olam B'Tas Paros Didan L'Chatchila Amai Lo Yeshev. Now, Rav Acha bar Yaakov says, look, we don't have to come on to the answer of we're talking about the son-in-law of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, who is going for a very special haircut. And quite frankly, by the way, that answer is really challenging because that's one person getting a very unique style of haircut. And it's hard to imagine that the Chachamim would create any kind of legislation for that one person. But anyway, so Rabbi Acha bar Yaakov gives a different answer. We're talking about a regular haircut. And lechatchila amai lo, yeshev, gzera shema yishaber azug. So, and as far as, even though we're talking about Mincha Gedola, the problem is, the concern is that you sit down for the haircut and the scissors break. And so, things happen. Events in life do not go as smoothly as planned. And so, it could very well be that a haircut that you expected to take maybe a half an hour is going to now be much longer because the scissors broke. Now, as far as going to the Shvitz, Why is there such a concern, even though there's so much time left in the day? Because it was not just a bathhouse, it was also a schwitz. And it could be that you're there for a long time, and after the long sauna, you're exhausted, and you won't have the energy and the kavana to daven. And as far as going into your tannery, so even though you expected it to be a short visit, but all of a sudden you're looking, you're investigating, and you see that there's a potential loss, and it totally knocked you off in terms of your kavana. Rashi says, you're so tarred. Rashi writes, Rashi's towards the bottom of the thin lines, you start via tarred b'tzaro v'lo yispalo. You're going to be so taken by your business and your financial losses, you just simply won't have the headspace to daven. And as far as even a small meal, the concern would be that with a small meal, okay, it started off as a small meal. Next thing you know, hours later, you're still sitting there. And even as we're talking about a judgment case, it could even be, you're even at the point of gemar, and you're expecting to be done, but lechatchila ma'alo d'machazi time of asasadina, because there could be an appeal made right there and then after, right before the judges were going to vote and decide on the matter, so someone raises an issue that no one took into consideration, and now they're basically opened up the case again, and once again, it could extend even further. Okay, so all these are explanations of how the Mishnah could be describing Mincha Gedola. We don't have to come on to these unusual scenarios. We can even be talking about these are regular cases, and yet, just simply because of circumstance of life, and not everything's going to go as smoothly as possible, so it still becomes a consideration, even if you're during the period of Mincha Gedola. And then as far as Mincha Katana is concerned, we could just simply plug in the rule of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, which is that one is not allowed to start any kind of meal before you get to Mincha Katana. And again, I just want to reiterate that nowadays where we have Minyan, and we have Tefillah Kavua, so it could be that these are serious considerations that would not bind us to the rule of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Continuing in the Gemara, just finishing up the daf, Me'emesai Hatchalas Tasparas. So we said in the Mishnah that if you started the haircut, even though you really shouldn't have, but if you did, so then you're given an allowance to continue, as long as you gauge that there's time left in the afternoon. When is considered the beginning of the haircut? And the Gemara is going to go through this with all the activities mentioned in the Mishnah. Me'emesai Hatchalas Tasparas, Amar Rav Avin, Mishianech Ma'aparas, Shall sapir and abir kav. So basically, when they put the cloth over you, the gown over you, so that's the beginning of the haircut. When you start taking off your clothes to go into the shvitz, and when did we say that you started going into the tannery? When you roll up your sleeves. And when exactly is the time that you started your meal? Halachically, when do we say that the haschala has begun? Rav Amar Mishiyatil Yadav. So Rav says when you wash your hands, and Rav Chanina Amar Mishiyatir Chagura, and Rabbi Chanina says when you undo your belt. Now the Gemara says Velo Pligi. Now it's not a debate over here; it's just reflecting the discrepant customs of the various communities of the Jews. Halan v'halahu. One is dealing with us, meaning we're learning Talmud Bavli, so that's a reference to the Bnei Bavel. And halahu, and the other one is for them, meaning Bnei Eretz Yisrael. And if you look at Rashi towards the bottom of the Amud, Rashi writes, halam v'halahu, Bnei Bavel hayuchogar nesatzman b'chozek. So the Bnei Bavel, so they used to wear their belts really tight. Ukisha ochlin tzrichin la'atiram. And therefore, when they sat down to eat, the first step they need to do is they need to loosen their belt a little bit. Ubnei Eretz Yisrael lo'ayunogin kain, b'hataras chagur akon entilas yadayim. So in Eretz Yisrael, they didn't have this custom of wearing the tight belt, and so therefore, they didn't have to go through this process. So for them, the beginning of the meal was when they washed their hands. That's Rashi's explanation. Let's just do a little bit more in the Gemara. Amar Abaye, Hani Chavrin Bavlai. So our colleagues over here in Bavo, Lamanda Amar Tfilas Arvis Rishus, if you subscribe to the position that Mariv is in fact optional, and we discussed this back extensively in Brachos, Kevin Deshar Lehimanya, so once they undid their belt, so we're not going to be matriach them to stop in order to daven. Meaning they can eat, and then if time allows, they can daven afterwards. Well, amand amar chova. Now, if you are of the opinion that mariv is an obligation, so then we are matriach. In other words, at this point in time, you have to stop in order to daven mariv. Super interesting Rashi over here at the bottom of the Amud. Rashi says, Laman da'amar tefillas arvis reshus. So Rashi makes a point that the Gemara that we did not see in the Gemara in Brachos. And that is as follows. We know that there were two Gemaras that were back-to-back in Brachos. The Gemara over here that we're learning, Chavav, and the Gemara in Chav Zayin. The Gemara in Chavav talked about whether or not Tefillah in general is keneged the Karbanos, or is it keneged the Avos? The Avos, Avram, Shachris, Yitzchak, Mincha, Yaakov, Mariv, or is it keneged the Karbanos? The obvious issue with the Karbanos is that there are only two Karbanos, the Tamashal Shachar and the Tamashal Bein Arbayin. That is the Gemara on Chavav. The Gemara on the next daf on Chav Zayin has a major debate on whether or not Mariv is a Chover or Mariv is a Rishus. And what you could say is that the two machloksim are contingent one on the other. It happens to be the Gemara there never said it. The Gemara never connected the two debates. If you take a look at Rashi over here, Rashi writes, Laman da'amar tefillas arvis reshus, b'maseches brachos mimneshi keneged hektar chalavim v'yemorim, she'ein ma'akvin kaparasan. So Rashi over here links the two points, and Rashi says that the one who subscribes to the idea that tefillas ma'arv is a reshus is in line with the position that tefillas are opposing, they're corresponding to the karbanos. So because the shachris is to the tamashal shachar, and mincha is to the tamashal bein arbayim, so therefore they are absolute obligations. But ma'ariv is only for the burning of the fats and the limbs. The burning of the fats and the limbs, although it's a mitzvah, it's not ma'akev, it doesn't hold back the kapara, and so Rashi now links the two points together. And that means that, if I just took Rashi to its conclusion, so that means that the one who subscribes to the idea that ma'ariv is a chova is subscribing that the tefillah is connected to the avos. In other words, Yaakov is as much of one of the patriarchs as Yitzchak and Avraham. And so therefore, Ma'arv would be a Chova. So Rashi over here creates that linkage, and it's really interesting because the Gemara over there never made any kind of linkage. Let's just quickly recap our daf today, and we'll obviously pick it up tomorrow morning. This morning, we spoke out the Braisa on Daf Vav Amud Aleph, and continued to expound and explain exactly what the Braisa is teaching us. On the Amud Aleph of today's daf, we basically went over the following points. One is that if I'm carrying through a Makom Patur, but it never stops in the Makom Patur, so we discount the fact that it went through a Makom Patur, and one would be Chayev. If it, however, stopped in the Makom Patur, and it made a Hanach in the Makom Patur, that obviously breaks up the act. The Gemara's discussion regarding the door, where the door is going to influence the threshold, and either treat it like the inside or outside, why should the door have any kind of influence? So the Gemara gave two involved answers in terms of when the door being open versus closed is going to have influence on whether or not the exterior is going to be have exterior status or interior status. The Gemara also discussed the case of the iskufa being 10 tefachim high and 4x4, where there the Brais on Davav says that you cannot transfer from your house to the iskufa, even though your house is Rishus Yachid, and the iskufa is Rishus Yachid, and they're contiguous to one another, but one cannot make the transfer. This is based on Gzera of Rabbi Meir, and as we pointed out, we don't paskin like that Gzera of Rabbi Meir, but that is the end of the Braisa. Then we turn to the Amud Beis today. We learned about activities that one is not allowed to do on Friday afternoon, but as we learned together, it's not limited to Friday afternoon. It would be true by any afternoon. It's just that it happens to be that also Friday afternoon as well. And for fear that you're going to miss mincha. And so the Mishnah made a number of activities prohibited to start as you approach the mincha for fear that you're just simply going to miss mincha. A number of details that we fleshed out. One is that was the Mishnah describing mincha katana or mincha gedola. Ostensibly it's talking about mincha gedola. Ostensibly it's talking about mincha katana, the later mincha. Because if it's mincha gedola, you're going to have plenty of time in order to engage in any of these activities. The Gemara now notes that it goes against Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Because Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says that once you are in the area of Mincha Ketana, it's forbidden to even start a meal as you're approaching Mincha Ketana. And so to which the Gemara says, is our Mishnah not going like Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi? And so the Gemara then segregated. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi was talking about Mincha Ketana, and our Mishnah is talking about Mincha Gedola. Back to our question, if our Mishnah is talking about Mincha Gedola, why is there any concern whatsoever? So the Gemara gave a couple of approaches. One is that our Mishnah was talking about very involved activities. Or two, our Mishnah was talking about regular activities, but life does not go as smoothly as we anticipated. Then the Gemara gave exact definition of when exactly do we say that you started these activities. the Gemara actually gave definition for each of the activities mentioned in the Mishnah. And then we concluded by saying that what about Mariv as a consideration? And the Gemara says that's going to be a question of whether or not Mariv is a Chova or Mariv is a Rishus.